Good evening. Good evening. It's Tuesday, 8 o'clock Eastern time here in the U.S., and that means it's time for Making Sense with Steve Laser. That's me, of course. And this show will be about well-reasoned political analysis based on the facts. Made-up information is going to be strongly frowned upon on this show. Lines of reasoning that consider only part of the relevant information about an issue are going to be strongly challenged by us. For instance, pretending that the economic crisis started the day President Obama was elected and suggesting it's his fault. I and most of my guests will call out that kind of thing. Each show, we're going to cover the most important political topics of the day, and I'll usually end with a Hall of Fame and Hall of Shame list comprised of the people in politics making the most sense and nonsense, respectively. Most shows, I'll have a number of guests, some who will tend to agree with the Democratic view of things, some who will agree with the Republican view of things, and some who disagree with both. One of the things that I really want to do is use the tools of Blog Talk Radio to maintain a continuing dialogue with you, the audience. Of course, by all means, part of that is call in anytime you want to talk to us or ask a question about what we're talking about. The call-in number for the show is 917-889-3891, and we can take up to 150 folks calling in and interacting with us at a time, so feel free to call us. But in addition to that, I'm going to be posting links or videos concerning what I intend to talk about, hours or in some case days before each show that you can look over, respond to, discuss. Also, if a point of fact or contention comes up during a show, I'll research it, and I'll post links or videos about it after the show. So like I said, it's what I call a continuing conversation with our listeners that I think makes this format a really fun and interesting one. Now, tonight's show, we're going to talk about the status of the race for the White House, beginning with the third debate. But before I do that, I want to start off with what I said will normally be the last segment of each show, and that's the Hall of Fame of people in politics who recently made sense or nonsense. But before I get into that, let me introduce my guest, Bob Furtick of Democrats.com, known as the Aggressive Progressives. How are you doing tonight, Bob? Hey, Bob, you there?
I'm doing great, yes. Sorry, I had
it on. Oh, okay. Great. No, we're happy to have you with us. What I'd ask you to do is hang on while I go through the Hall of Fame and Shame here shortly, and we'll get into some of the other stuff. So let's start off in our Hall of Fame and Shame with nonsense. In fourth place, we have some pretty bad nonsense. Todd Akin, already reviled throughout the country for his crazy and nonsensical remarks suggesting it is impossible for a woman to get pregnant from rape, has twice in the last 3 days called his opponent in the Missouri Senate race, Claire McCaskill, a dog who should go fetch. Let's listen.
So she goes to Washington, D.C., and it's a little bit like, one of those dog, fetch. And she goes to Washington, D.C. and gets all of these taxes and red tape and bureaucracy and executive orders and agencies, and she brings all of this stuff and dumps it on us in Missouri. And it seems to me that she's got it just backwards. What we should be doing is taking the common sense that we see in Missouri and taking that to Washington, D.C. and blessing them with some solutions instead of more problems. And that's one of the reasons why we got to get her...
So before that horrible display by Mr. Akin, he was already about 15 points behind in the Missouri Senate race. It's probably worse than that now. And just to remind listeners, this is not just a congressional race. This is the Senate, supposed to be the upper house. It's supposed to be dignified. You're supposed to have some sort of semblance of class, which Akin seems totally unable to display any kind of or semblance of. In third place, we have worse nonsense. Rudy Giuliani, appearing on every cable news show that will have him in the last few days, has been attacking Obama over Benghazi. After Giuliani gave a complete pass to George W. Bush over 9/11, despite the fact that the Bush and his the Bush administration and his national security team had three warnings from the CIA about Al-Qaeda trying to use airplanes to attack us. Multiple warnings during the transition from Clinton's administration. The Clinton transition team helped him and told him to beware of Al-Qaeda. And he and Bush and Condi Rice had several personal appeals from the then head of the CIA warning them that an attack was imminent, and they ignored it. No taking of Bush or his team to task by Giuliani after 2,500 people, 2,500 Americans killed on 9/11, but he attacks Obama over Benghazi. So he is third worst. In second place, even worse nonsense from Jill Walsh, running for Congress in Illinois, claiming pregnant women don't die, and so there's no excuse for them to have an abortion, and thus we should be able to outlaw it. Let's listen.
If a woman's life is at issue, would you say she should be allowed to have an abortion?
Let me briefly say there's no such exception. With modern technology and science, you can't find one instance. This is an issue that opponents of life throw out there to make us look unreasonable. There's no such exception as life of the mother. And as far as health of the mother, same thing. With advances in science and technology, health of the mother has become a tool for abortions for any time under any reason.
Do you mean to say it's never medically necessary to do an abortion to save the life of the mother?
Absolutely.
So, of course, Joe Walsh is also now, as a result, not doing so well in his race for Congress. He and his campaign immediately started trying to walk that back. Doctors of all stripes called in and said that's absolutely not true. There are at least half a dozen to a dozen medical issues that could require women to get an abortion in order to save their life. And, of course, the idea that pregnancy infers some sort of immortality on women is obviously completely ridiculous. But this is kind of a thing that we're seeing from Republicans. All of these wacky, ridiculous ideas regarding contraception and abortion and women's rights, all excuses to take those rights away from women, take us back to the 40s and 50s. Then we have though the debate nonsense from Mitt Romney. In fact, throughout the entire third debate, which was supposed to be about foreign policy, Mitt Romney could not articulate a single coherent bit of policy on any foreign policy issue. You know, Bob and I think, are going to get a little bit more into that in a moment, but the worst of the worst in nonsense in the last few days was Romney's suggestion that Syria is Iran's route to the sea. And this is probably one of the more hard things to understand because, you can have differences of opinion on all kinds of issues and things like that, but how can you have differences of opinion when you look at a map? It's very clear. I think I mentioned to listeners earlier when I'd said that one of the things that I enjoy about Blog Talk Radio is you can post things on the site to describe some of the things that you're talking about, back them up. I posted a map of the Middle East in case anybody doubts how wrong Mitt Romney was on this issue, and it clearly shows Iran has an unobstructed route to the sea. It has several beaches and clear access to the sea, and doesn't even share a common border with Syria. So the idea that Syria is in the path for Iran to get to the sea is absolutely ridiculous and really hard to understand. It's quite an impressive feat of nonsense from Mitt Romney. So let's go to the other side of things. Let's go to politicians who made sense over the last couple of days. And starting off, I want to go to our president and a speech that he gave on Friday.
I mean, he's changing up so much and backtracking and sidestepping. We've got to name this condition that he's going through. I think it's called Romnesia. That's what it's called. I think that's what he's going through. I'm not a medical doctor, but I do want to go over some of the symptoms with you, because I want to make sure nobody else catches it. If you say you're for equal pay for equal work, but you keep refusing to say whether or not you'd sign a bill that protects equal pay for equal work, you might have amnesia. If you say women should have access to contraceptive care, but you support legislation that would let your employer deny you contraceptive care, you might have a case of amnesia.
So one of the things that I found particularly appealing about this bit of beautiful sense from the president is not only did he call out a really ugly tactic of Mitt Romney in trying to deny all of his policies, make himself look better during the debates, but he attacked nonsense at the same time. So it was sense overcoming nonsense. Romney became really the theme for the last couple of days leading into the debate. And even today, it's a trending term on Twitter. So a great victory for the administration and a victory for common sense in politics over nonsense. Number one, though, in making sense was the president last night talking about Mitt Romney's contention about a small Navy or a shrinking Navy in the context of the horses and bayonets comment. I don't know if everybody has heard this. Probably everybody has from the debate last night. Again, you have a situation where Romney is trying to muddy the waters. He's trying to claim that, like Republicans always do every time we get into a presidential contest, that Democrats aren't as strong on defense, and we would leave the country weaker and things like that. Even in a situation where the president has had several major successes going after top al-Qaeda figures and Osama bin Laden, he's still trying to make that point. And the president really shut him down. He said, the military is about capabilities. We used to have to go after, in World War II, we would go after a factory. We had to send 100 B-17s. We can accomplish that now with a flight of four or five of our modern fighter jets. This is all about capabilities. It's about force multipliers and things like that. It's not about how many planes. It's not about how many ships. It's about how capable those things are. So once again, a beautiful illustration of sense by the president. And that actually segues into our next topic pretty elegantly, which is the third debate. Who won and why? And I want to go to you, Bob, and get your opinion on this. Who won the third debate and why? Oh, I think we actually lost Bob. So I will actually go to a caller. Let's see here. Caller, you are on the air.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Snow. I'm actually the Democratic congressional candidate running for Florida's new 12th district. And I just wanted to say I thought President Obama did an amazing job. He showed why he is the leader of the free world and why he needs to continue being the leader of the free world.
Outstanding, outstanding. So you think he won this last debate?
Oh, decisively, absolutely decisively. I mean, you talked about some of the gas Romney made, which I hope many of the different media sources talk about this because Americans aren't very familiar with geography, but a person running to be president of the country and leader of the world needs to know a little geography. And for Romney has said that that Iran is using Syria as their way to the ocean. It's absolutely ridiculous. I've seen it pop up all over Twitter and Facebook today. People are posting maps showing where Iran is and saying, you know, there's water to the north and water to the south. That, I thought, was absolutely devastating for Romney. He looked unstable. He was sweaty. He looked nervous. And he showed why he's not going to be able to go toe-to-toe with our enemies and our allies.
So you said you're running for Congress. I just want to go back to that for just a minute. Which district are you running for down there in Florida?
This is Florida's new 12th congressional district. It encompasses all of Pasco County, the north part of Pinellas County, and the northwest part of Hillsborough County. And anyone who wants to know all about this race can go to my website, snowforcongress.com, and read up all about me and why I'm in this race. I mean, the guy I'm running against, he's essentially a mirror image of Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney's running mate. He's voted 33 times to repeal the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. He's received a zero rating for this congressional session from the Florida Association of Retired Americans because he has not stood up for veterans issues, has not stood up for issues of retired Americans. He's voted twice for the Paul Ryan budget to end Medicare as we know it and replace it with this enhanced coupon program, which, quite frankly, is terrifying to the people of this district. And he's just been wrong issue after issue.
And if you don't mind me asking, because you didn't mention his name, what's the name? I take it he's the incumbent in that race?
Yes. I'm referring, of course, to Congressman Gus Bilirakis.
Ugh. If I'm not mistaken, this was almost a bit of nepotism, right? Wasn't his father in that seat before him?
Yes, his father, Michael Gus Bilirakis, held the seat before him and left in 2006. His son has been there since then and has refused to debate his opponents in every election. And it's quite frankly a reflection of the fact that he can't run on his record. We've seen, as I talked about, the Florida Association of Retired Americans, a 0% score for this Congress. The NAACP, I believe, gave him a rating of like 3%. So he's not standing up for the issues that matter to people. Part of the reason I got involved in this race was I used to send him petition letters and call his office repeatedly, and the majority of the time I'd get back nothing. But when I would hear back, I'd get this boilerplate letter that was clearly outdated, and it generally said, well, I'm not on the committee that deals with that issue, and so I can't talk about it except for vote for it if it came down onto the floor. To me, that is not only just appalling for him to say that, it is wrong and it is a lie. As a member of Congress,
Mr. Snow?
They can talk about issues, they can introduce this, and at the very least, put forward their own plan for dealing with them.
Well, Mr. Snow, hang on, do me a favor, stay with us, because I'd like to get your opinion on more issues, but I'd like to welcome back Bob Furtick. I apologize, Bob, I think we got disconnected, but glad to
have
you back.
Great to be with you.
Great to have you back. Bob, just to remind folks, is the guy who's the owner and runner, the person who runs Democrats.com, the Aggressive Progressives. It's a great website. And, Bob, we were discussing the third debate, who won. We actually have another caller who's on with us, Mr. Snow, who's running for Congress as a Democrat down in Florida. He seems to think that the president did well and won the debate. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he was very presidential. He's the commander-in-chief. People see that. The difference in understanding of complicated issues, whether it was Iran's route to the sea or,
Sorry.
It's
just hard to listen to that and not laugh, isn't it? I mean, it's just one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
It's not really a surprise because Romney's whole experience is in making money and not in dealing with complicated international issues. And I'm sure he's studied up. But if you haven't dealt with these issues, if you haven't lived them, it's just textbook knowledge. It's just, what's come in one ear and half of it's gone out the other. So he's not ready to be president, and I think people saw that last night.
I want to go back to something that I mentioned earlier. Can either of you gentlemen recall a single coherent thought from Mitt Romney on any foreign policy issue? And I know all three of us are on the Democratic, progressive, liberal left. So, but trying to be fair, can you think of any coherent thought that Mr. Romney had on any foreign policy issue? I couldn't think of it.
Well, the only thing I would be able to say is that he says he wants to increase military funding, but he doesn't say what for or what that's going to be used for. And, I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but, at least he put something out there because there was absolutely nothing other than I agree with what Obama's doing, only I would have done it faster and it would have looked nicer.
Yeah, and the other thing he adds is posturing. That was what the whole Libya thing was about, that we should – that the rhetoric that the president uses should be obnoxious and antagonistic and unapologetic. That's their meme is apologies. And what does that mean? You know, I mean, we had a blustering president for 8 years who didn't just use rhetoric. He followed it up with action. He invaded Iraq. And what did that get us? It didn't make us any friends. And the theory, I think the Republican theory, is that the world will respect us if we exhibit strength, whatever that means. If we invade countries, they'll fear us and respect us. But what we saw with the Iraq experience, and we see it also with Afghanistan, is that military force doesn't win us any friends. It just encourages angry citizens to learn how to make bombs.
Well, and let's remember, too, that the Republicans had so destroyed our image across the world that when friends would be traveling overseas, their friends and family would be telling them, well, just make sure you don't wear anything that identifies yourself as an American. In fact, wear a Canadian shirt because everyone loves the Canadians. There's nobody saying that now. The president and his administration and Hillary Clinton have been absolutely amazing on foreign policy. We're getting cooperation with nations who I'm amazed that we're able to get so much done. I know everything doesn't go exactly the way we want to with Russia and China, but they're cooperating with us on the issues that matter the most, like sanctions for Iran.
Let me jump in here for a minute. I just want to back up what you just said. I probably traveled two or three times overseas, Europe, actually all three times between 2003 and 2007 to Europe. And every single time that I said I was an American, I would get this face from whoever it was I was talking to, this really negative, unhappy face. And I immediately would have to follow that up with, listen, I'm a Democrat, I'm against the Iraq war, and then their facial expressions would soften, and they would, you know, treat me well after that point. But you're absolutely right. It really caused some negative feelings overseas to the United States. At the beginning of the Iraq war, I worked for, I don't want to mention the name of the company because obviously I don't have their permission, but I worked for a company that exported technology overseas, in addition to selling it here. And we actually got calls, the equipment that we sold was fairly expensive. We actually got calls from some of the companies to whom we were going to sell this equipment asking us to unequivocally say that the company had a position against the Iraq war, otherwise they were threatening to withdraw their orders. So this is the type of thing where a bad foreign policy, it has a direct impact on the economy and our ability to compete overseas. I don't know if you guys remember, there were reports that people were trying not to buy a Coca-Cola. They were trying to buy European and African substitutes like Africola and things like that. So when we have a foreign policy that the rest of the world does not appreciate and respect, and I'm not talking about potential adversaries. I'm talking about our friends. I'm talking about Europe. When Europe doesn't appreciate us, our policy, and doesn't think that we're acting responsibly, it has a direct economic impact, not just people's opinions, but it has an economic impact. But I want to sort of turn us back to the debate, and I want to mention what I heard from a lot of the conservative and Republican pundits after the debate, including one of the top former McCain people on MSNBC, who claimed that Romney did what he had to do in the debate. He said that he presented himself as a credible commander-in-chief. And I sat there and I listened to him, and I thought, is this just regular Republican spin? I mean, is there any way that you would think that somebody who came across like Romney did in that debate has presented himself as a credible commander-in-chief? Do you think that he met that threshold, either of you? Bob,
well, I'll go ahead and take that. No, he did not. I would say the Romney campaign went into that debate with two strategies. One is to make no gaffes, which they failed, and two is to come off as a credible alternative. And he failed on that regard, too. I think the percentage of Americans that are undecided or just consider themselves to be leaning and not completely committed to one candidate or another last night, when they were watching this debate, what they saw is President Obama lay out his clear, steady vision. And then they saw Romney say something that was not all that different or either praising what the president said, in which point the president would go ahead and point out Romney's various all-over-the-place positions. So I think many Americans sitting there watching that last night So Romney has nothing to offer. He is not credible on this. He's either lying about what he's telling us right now or just agreeing with what the president's doing. He's not giving the American people a reason to divert with President Obama on foreign policy.
And what's scary is what wasn't said, and really what's most important is that Romney's advisors are the same people that Bush relied on. It's John Bolton, it's the neocons, and they're the folks who got us into Iraq, which was a catastrophe, which the Republicans refused to admit or acknowledge or deal with, and we're going to end up in more wars if Romney's elected. He'll be pushed into a confrontation with Iran. The former head of Mossad is very angry about what Romney's been saying in terms of Iran, and we are.
You don't believe this? You don't believe all the new peace stuff that he was saying during the debate?
Right. Well, not with the people that he's got around him. I mean, we all remember George Bush campaigned on, he promised a humble foreign policy. That was his watchword. And he promised there would be no nation building. It was the same kind of approach that Romney's taking now, where he's really downplaying what he plans to do. But, you know, we have every reason to expect that if he's bringing those people back into the Pentagon and the White House, that we're going to end up in the same kind of wars that we learned were so disastrous under Bush.
And two notes on that. One, if Romney is such the peace candidate, what does he need another $2 million for the Defense Department? He kept claiming that the president's trying to cut. I'm sorry, yeah, $2 trillion. And he tried to claim that the president was trying to cut a trillion, which is not even true. So if you're going to have all this peace that he's talking about, why do we need to spend more on war? But the second part of that, I want to say, was going back to talking about our foreign influence and with gas prices. I thought the president handled the question in the second debate very well, but he missed an important part of that piece, saying that the Republicans are advocating additional wars in the Middle East. Not only is this ridiculous, crazy foreign policy, but it's hurting us economically because it is causing gas prices to go up. And so I wish we would have got a little bit of that in the second debate. I know there's no really way to bring that around in the third debate here because the focus was completely on foreign policy, but the Republicans have been advocating for more wars. And that's not going to help us, not economically, not socially, and not in the long term.
Well, I don't see why it couldn't have been brought up in this third debate. I mean, every chance that he got, Romney talked about the economy. So I think it would have been, quite fine for the president to do the same. You know what I was sort of hoping that the president would do in any one of these debates, especially this last one, is to focus on Romney's job record in Massachusetts. You know, Romney has been touting himself in these debates as somebody who can create jobs. He claims that he's got experience doing it in the private sector. He claimed he did it in Massachusetts. But the fact of the matter is, and even Rick Santorum said this in the Republican primary, Newt Gingrich said this in the Republican primary, Rick Perry said this about Romney in the Republican primary. He was 47th out of 50th in job creation when he was governor of Massachusetts. Third worst. I mean, that's a horrible record. His popularity rating at the end of his term was so bad he couldn't run for reelection. The people of Massachusetts couldn't get rid of him fast enough. They thought he was a horrible governor. And I would have played up, if I had been on the Obama campaign team, I would have played up the idea that the people of Massachusetts are the only people who have lived through both a Romney and an Obama administration, and they're currently polling for Obama 2-1 over Romney. And I think that's a message to the rest of the country, and I don't understand why that hasn't been brought up. He had an easy job in Massachusetts as governor compared to what he would have as president. It's much easier. All you have is the economy to deal with, and some semblance of social issues and things like that. You don't have foreign policy. It's not as big of an economy to deal with, and he failed at that. So now we have sort of this Peter Principle candidate, this guy who failed at a much easier job, now going for a much more difficult job. I don't understand why Team Obama did not bring that up in any of the debates. I think that would have been an absolute winner. They let him get away with this idea that he's a job creator. He's not a job creator. He's a job outsourcer, and in Massachusetts he failed to create jobs, but there's no argument that you can make that Mitt Romney creates jobs. So that absolutely drove me crazy. One other point that I want to make, and I apologize, I don't want to monopolize this discussion, but Mitt Romney likes to say that he would be tougher. Of course, he didn't say this in the debate, but he would be tougher on North Korea and Iran. He says that whenever he's not in a debate, than Obama. He projects himself as this tough guy. He's going to stand up for America. Then he chickened out of appearing on The View because he was afraid of Whoopi Goldberg, and he said so in what he thought was that private campaign fundraising appearance back in June. He cowers from Whoopi Goldberg. He cowers and basically hugs Obama's policies at the third debate, but he's supposed to be this strong guy who's going to confront our enemies. I don't see any evidence that he would be that guy at all. So, you know, he's portrayed all these things about himself that I really wish that the president and the Obama campaign would have really taken more advantage of. But let's move on here. So we are right now 2 weeks away from the election, which I hope will be a re-election for President Obama. And I hope, Mr. Snow, I hope we'll be celebrating an election victory for you down there in Florida. But in terms of the presidential campaign, what's the state of the campaign? Who do you guys think is ahead, and who has momentum?
I'm looking at 538. I'm getting all my data from Nate Silver, and it's a great site because it breaks things down to the decimal point, and it's based on averages, but also based on a lot of sophisticated modeling. And so when Nate Silver says that Obama's chances of winning are 70.3%, and it's up 4.3% since October 15th, since a week ago, and I see the graph, it looks like the president has the momentum that he needs. It's going to be a close race. It'll be 50-49, but he'll do better in the battleground states, and he'll get 291 electoral college votes. Oh, he needs 270. Unless Donald Trump pulls some rabbit out of the hat tomorrow, or unless there's an alien invasion, I think people have made up their minds. 4 million people have already voted early, so those votes are already cast. And the Obama get-out-the-vote operation is strong in the battleground states. It's really something that President Obama – it's how he won the nomination in 2008. He had a much better field operation than Hillary Clinton did. So it's part of his DNA. He's got an organization that really executes brilliantly. So I think we're in pretty good shape, like I said, unless there's either a Donald Trump amazing revelation or an alien invasion.
I absolutely agree. And I think in a campaign where I think there were probably a lot of opportunities missed, I think the Obama get out the vote effort is definitely the bright spot of the campaign. He's clearly winning the early voting, getting the Democrats out there to the polls in all the states where you've got early voting. That might end up being the difference, quite honestly. What do you think, Mr. Snow?
I think it will make the difference. I think the president is leading. The president has momentum. I think in this election, there's only two states you really need to focus on, Florida and Ohio. Now, the president can win without winning either of those states, and he has to win, obviously, one of the two. But when you reverse it around and look from Romney's perspective, there is no way he can win the presidency without winning one of those two states. Particularly if he wins Florida, I just don't see how the math works out. So what they have done is work on their ground game, and they work on getting out the vote early. In my district here, we've already had 9% of the voters in this district go ahead and vote early, vote by mail, as we're calling it down here. And that is much larger of a percentage we have seen in previous elections. We're also seeing Democrats do very well in this. This is something in the past that in Florida, at least, Republicans have excelled at, to the point where Democrats were only voting by mail about 25% of what the Republicans were. Now it's neck and neck, and in some cases, Democrats are leading. We do very well in early voting, which starts next week for us, and I know we're going to have an amazing turnout. And it's looking like I could see from the Democratic perspective in Florida here, us getting out 80% of Democrats. And if we can get 80% of Democrats out or more, we will win. One county to look at in particular, just happens to be my district here, is Pasco County in Florida. The reason why you want to look at this district is this county is it turns in their votes very quickly. It's not a very big county, but it's big enough that you can get a sampling. It's also got a good sampling of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. If you look to see who wins in this county, if President Obama wins, he's won the state of Florida. If Romney wins by less than 5% in Pasco County, it's possible that the president's still going to pick up. Romney has to win in Pasco County with over 5% if he wants to win in the state of Florida and therefore gain the office of the presidency, and I just don't see that happening right now. We don't have the money that the Republicans have. We never were going to. But they've confused this job of commander-in-chief as being salesman-in-chief. Romney, that's what his job has been, is to go in and close the deal at the last moment. But no matter how much money you have, you cannot sell a bad product. And they're trying to sell a bad product. A failed ideas from the 20s, as far as economic policies, they've got the social ideas from the 50s and the foreign policy ideas from the 80s, as the last night the president said. They are selling the worst product that has taken place in my lifetime and probably the lifetime of most people across this country. They're not going to win. It's not going to happen, but we have to remain vigilant as Democrats and make sure we turn out the votes. And I'm telling people this is the most important election of their lifetime, possibly the most important election that they will ever have.
Just so I can let the voters know a little bit. So you guys may not know this. I actually got my political start in Florida, just south of where you are right now, Mr. Snow, in Pinellas County. And if I'm not mistaken, geographically, Pasco County is just to the north of Hillsborough. Is that correct?
If Pasco and Hillsborough and Pinellas are all counties that touch, yes. Pasco is just north of Pinellas and Hillsborough.
And Hillsborough. So you're just north of the I-4 corridor, which is really the swing area of the state. So that whole area, like you were saying, the way that area goes is basically the way Florida goes. That's probably a very exciting place to be right now. If I could ask you, how are you doing right now versus your opponent, Mr. Bilirakis?
Well, he's outspending me. I think the last time I saw was something like over 15-1. But that being said, he has refused to debate me because people know that he can't defend himself on these issues. He's not a very good speaker. Many people have become fed up with him. My issue comes down to worrying about people who think he's his father. While I did not agree with his father on a lot of the issues, his father was an honorable man and would divert with the Republican Party for the goodwill of the district. His son has not shown that same courage and backbone and leadership. His son, Gus Bilirakis, my opponent here, has just gone with the Republican Party on absolutely every single radical position they want, be it from banning birth control to trying to make the president embarrassed by going after Eric Holder over nothing. And so yeah. I'm very optimistic. Right now, what we've seen from just the vote by mail, what we've seen calculated is that it's very close as far as Democrats and Republicans that have come out. The district is a Republican-leaning district, so they do have a slight advantage in vote by mail. But the fact that we're even contesting right now in vote by mail is an amazing accomplishment of what these local Democrats have been doing. They've been making phone calls, they've been calling people, and we've been turning out vote by mail like Democrats never have in this state.
Yeah, it's pretty, having lived in Florida for 12 years, I left in 2003 or so, most people don't understand just how bad things were in Florida. When you say that it used to be 25% or less in terms of absentee voting for Democrats versus Republicans, things were really bad in the state of Florida. I mean, in the state House and state Senate, Republicans used to have more than veto-proof majorities in both houses. The tactic that you mentioned of Gus Bilirakis not debating you is a very common one down there, especially in districts where they feel safe and they have pretty high Republican registration versus Democrats. It's not a very good thing, obviously, for the voters. It's a shameful thing, really, to do, not to give the voters a choice to see both candidates in the same room at the same time discussing the issues. This all, by the way, the reason why I'm bringing this up and talking about this in an extended way is because that's all sort of what led to what happened in 2000 with the election. One of the reasons that Gore had such a hard time prosecuting his case in Florida is because 80% of the Florida State Senate and House were Republican. All those people came out and started talking to the local media in Florida when that whole crisis happened, and it really turned around the sentiment in Florida against Al Gore and really changed the whole face of the recount from what it would have been. The other thing that they did was the Florida State Legislature got together and voted to give their electoral votes to George W. Bush, regardless of the recount. And since the Congress gives the state legislature the power to determine, since the Constitution gives the state legislatures the power to determine how electoral votes are determined or given out, that would have probably resulted in a Bush presidency, regardless of whether or not the Supreme Court had allowed the recount to continue. That's something that a lot of people don't notice. So Florida was a very hostile place towards Democrats for a very long time, and it's great to hear that things are changing, and that really gives me hope that the president has a good chance down there this year. But to Bob's point, you know, you're looking at Bob was looking at 538. I'm looking at Real Clear Politics right now. I think regarding who's going to win, there's a four-state firewall that I think that the president has going on right now. And those states that I'm looking at are Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Iowa. The president is leading in all four of those states. He's at 48% or more, if I'm not mistaken, in all four of those states. There's really no room for Romney to pick up enough points to overcome him. Early voting has started in Ohio already, so whatever advantage Obama has is going to be locked into that early vote. If the president can hold those four states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Iowa, there's no path for Mitt Romney to get to 270 electoral votes. It's going to be very close. We need every single vote, I think, to win this. But I think the president is going to pull this out. But let me turn to another topic now. I'm almost afraid to raise this topic. But and I'm going to go to Bob first on this one. If the unthinkable happens, because it is a close race, right? In a race that's close, sometimes anything can happen. If the unthinkable happens and Mitt Romney wins, what would a Romney presidency be like?
Well, he's going to bring back all the kinds of people that we had in the Bush administration. He's going to have John Bolton as his number one or number two foreign policy advisor, alienating the world. He's going to revive the war on women. You know, they'll do it incrementally, and they'll pretend that they're not waging war on women, but they'll create so many economic barriers to getting health care. Well, they're going to repeal Obamacare. That'll be the first thing that they do. They've announced that, and Republican Congress desperately wants to do it. Romney says he wants to replace some portions of it, but these guys are not known for their subtlety. So we're going to be back where we were 5 years ago, where healthcare costs are soaring and people can't afford it, and declaring bankruptcy to try and pay for their medical bills, being forced out of their homes. It's not a pretty picture. And we'll have tax cuts for the rich, because when Republicans come into power, that's at the top of their list.
So,
everything Bob said is absolutely correct, only it'll be worse, because Mitt Romney, I am certain, as president, would do whatever the person with the biggest check asked him to do. And in that situation, nothing, as horrible as it could be, it becomes impossible. I really believe that we'd have another war. I think he would cause another war.
Well, we're not far from one really now with Iran. I mean, I think cooler heads have prevailed over the last 3 to 5 years. But clearly we're close to a situation where we could easily get beyond the point of no return with Iran. There was a report a couple of days ago that said that they're ready to talk to us. I think President Obama addressed that last night in the debate and said it wasn't true. I'm not sure if I heard that correctly. But
yeah,
okay, good. So without some clear-headed thinking on this, somebody who really understands diplomacy and foreign policy, we could easily find ourselves in another Middle Eastern war. And just think about that. So wars are very expensive. Romney already wants to spend another $2 trillion on defense. The war would cost even more than that. A $5 trillion tax cut on top of that. And then, you know, it's unthinkable where we would be economically at that point. We would have to either we would have two choices. We would either go completely into the toilet in terms of debt, and the S&P would probably downgrade us several categories if we added, you know, now we're talking $8 or $9 trillion in additional debt. The S&P would downgrade us. We would be in a really bad downward spiral. If people think we're bad now, after something like that, we'd really be in bad shape. We'd have a war. We'd have more young soldiers dying in the field. No health care to come back to. It's really I don't know if people really understand how bad that is. I was telling some folks at work today. I asked them what they thought of the Bush administration. Not too many people have fond memories of that. And I said, do you want to see what would have happened with a third or fourth Bush term? Is that something that you find appealing? Because this guy is hiring all of those same guys to run his foreign policy, to run his economic team. The neocons who were from the project of the New American Century, the folks who were really driving the Iraq war, as I think Bob pointed out, they said it would project American power. It would make America seem like this strong country that everybody wants to obey. The neocons actually said that if we showed who was boss in the Middle East by invading Iraq, that everybody else would fall into line and start obeying us. I don't know where they got that. If you look at Middle Eastern history, the Crusades and all of that, you would never get that impression that that's how the people in the Middle East would react to a war like that. But that's what they said. They'd be back in power now, probably anxious to try to prove themselves correct. And it's really a scary thought, and I don't think that point has been made. I think you guys and I, we know that because we know who this guy is. We know who the folks are that he's surrounding himself with. What can the president do to make that point? What can he do in the last 2 weeks to make sure that the people know that?
Well, he's going to have to do it state by state, and particularly in Florida and Ohio. One of the big things in Florida, a little bit in Ohio, but particularly in Florida, we've seen voter suppression. And when I go and talk to people and I say everything is at stake, I share them the story of this gentleman who was born in Columbia. He's been a Florida resident for the past 20 years, an American citizen for over 20 years, and he has voted in every single election he's been able to. And he gets one of these letters from our governor that tells him that he may not be a citizen, he may not be eligible to vote, and he has to go prove to the state that he is, in fact, who he says he is. And he gets all his documents together, which is, you know, a feat in itself because how many people have that laying around ready to go. Goes down there, and they say, okay, yes, we got everything straightened out. You're good to go. Yes, you can vote. And about a week and a half later, he gets another one of these letters saying the same exact thing. He has to go through the entire process. And so when you try to take away the fundamental right to vote, that hits people really hard, and it's ticked people off. And I think it's part of the reason why I talked to some lifelong Republicans who have said to me, you know, I never thought I would say that I would vote for a Democrat, but for the first time in my life, I'm voting for all the Democrats as a protest vote against these radical, out-of-touch Republicans.
Well, I'm glad voters are reacting to this. I mean, the memories of 2000 hopefully are fresh in the minds of Floridians. I mean, it's certainly fresh in my mind, and all the things that went wrong in 2000, most of them they've made them worse this year with these voter ID laws.
In Florida, we have this prayer that the precinct captains and precinct volunteers say on election day. They say, may turnout be big, may everything function as far as the machines, and may the winners win big, because we're in Florida, we do not want a recount. So that is absolutely in our minds every election.
Well, and they're talking about, I mean, we know this is going to be a close election, and there are triggers that mandate a automatic recount. I think in Florida it was 0.5% difference, you know, if it's less than 0.5% difference between the two candidates. So, So we are likely to see it. And with all these, we're going to end up with a lot of people casting provisional ballots, ballots that are in question because of their registration status, as you were describing. And the counting of those provisional ballots is going to be all-out warfare in terms of litigation, in terms of, you know, what's going on in the press and how the right wing is going to go and argue about it. I mean, we went through all this in 2000. It's going to be a replay if it's close. So I'm getting down on my knees to pray with you that the winner wins by a lot.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, to the point you just made, Bob, I think the Romney campaign has already hired the lawyer who litigated Bush versus Gore for the Bush team. I think I remember reading that somewhere. So, you know, if it's a close race, we might be headed for some ugly stuff.
I don't know if he was hired by the campaign, but I do know they used him to play Barack Obama in the debate practice. No, sorry, they used him to play Vice President Joe Biden in Paul Ryan's debate practice.
Yeah, I thought I remember that they've hired him just in case things happen like they did in 2000. But you know what? I'm going to use the tools of Blog Talk Radio, like I talked about earlier, and I'm going to post a link to that one way or the other on the show site to let our viewers know whether I was right or wrong about that. I want to sort of return to what life would be under Romney. And the thing I want to concentrate on a little bit more is, Bob, you mentioned the war on women. And just a quick preview to next week's show, by the way, that both of you gentlemen are invited back. I am going to have representatives from various minority and women's groups to describe how important this election is to them. I'm going to have a gentleman who wrote a wonderful Get Out the Vote song for Latinos on the show. I'm going to have the director of Harlem for Obama on the show next week, folks from several women's groups and several lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender groups on the show. This is Thursday at 8 o'clock at the same time, and we're going to discuss that. But let's get a little preview of that tonight. The war on women, Bob, what exactly do you mean by that? I know what you mean by that, but for the sake of our listeners, what do you think would happen under a Romney administration?
Well, there would be legislation that the House Republicans will push, led by Paul Ryan, to make it as, you know, hard as possible to get an abortion, to get contraception. And ultimately, it leads to a Supreme Court appointment. There will be one or two for the next president. And if they can replace one of the Democrats, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is getting on and not terribly well. If they could replace her with a Sam Alito or a John Roberts, they would overturn Roe versus Wade. They would probably replace it with a declaration that life begins at conception, which would outlaw all abortions. Now, Romney says he'd prefer to turn it over to the states, which means that 40 out of 50 states would outlaw abortion through their state legislature. So we'd end up with a few blue states that had legal abortion and a whole bunch of red states that where it was illegal. And, you know, what happens then? And then we're back to the 50s where women would either have to travel to a state where abortion was legal or they'd resort to other methods. So, you know, this is what the future looks like. It's a return to the 50s.
Jonathan, do you agree?
Yes, I think it'd actually be worse than that. I think they would ban abortion nationwide. And the reason I can say that is my opponent and Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney's running mate, voted to ban birth control. They may not realize that's what they voted for, but they voted for a personhood amendment. When Mitt Romney was on Mike Huckabee's show a few months back, he said that he would, in fact, support a personhood amendment. I don't think they understand how birth control works. And so hormonal birth control, in some cases, conception occurs, but it prevents pregnancy. And so their personhood amendment to define life at conception would make it illegal to take birth control, anything other than condoms, which is absolutely ridiculous. And I think it's a strong reason why young people in strong numbers are absolutely against the Republican plan, And the only thing that concerns me is that they're going to be so turned off by the Republicans that they're thinking, maybe I don't want to vote. But I don't think that's going to happen this time. So the war on women has been all over the place, particularly for the Republicans. We've seen it as far as being able to control your own body. For me, I've never understood why men ever get asked this question, where we stand on abortion, because we're not the one who has to go through it. We don't ask women where they stand on men's issues. So for me, this has been a sad issue that we even talk about this. But we've also seen Romney with the Equal Pay for Equal Work Act, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act that the president was the first bill he signed into law. Romney's administration has been unable to say where he even stands on this issue. He didn't say it last night at the debate. Instead, he said, well, you know, he had binders full of women, which is an offensive comment. But what does it say that he said, well, you know, I've been in business all these years, but I didn't know a single qualified woman to work in my administration? That, I think, says a lot, too.
Not only that,
I talked to one woman the other day. She said,
right?
I could never understand why any Republican would vote for any woman would vote for a Republican.
Well, you know, not only that, the binder statement was a lie. He claimed that he asked to be provided binders full of women, but actually it was a Massachusetts women's group that put this binder, I hate calling it a binder, but they put this binder together that had a whole big list of women candidates and their resumes, and they were going to give it to whoever was elected governor in 2003. It happened to be Romney. He didn't ask for it. They gave it to him, and he portrayed this during the debate as this effort by him to make sure that there were women in his administration is just not the case. Luckily for our side, he did that pretty ineptly. It became a nice big joke in the campaign. But
and the percentage of women in the governor's administration actually decreased during Romney's time there, and went back up as soon as he left office with Governor Deval Patrick.
So guys, we're almost out of time. So I'd like to sort of give a minute to each of you to sort of sum up some of the things that we talked about today, anything that you didn't get to say. I also want to invite our viewers back again, once again next Thursday, this upcoming Thursday, I should say, when we discuss the impact of this election on minorities and women. But go ahead, you first, Bob, anything that you've got to say for the next minute or so.
I just want to put in a plug for a new website we built called supervoters.org, which is a collection of every political video that you would ever want to see. We have not just official videos, but we have like the 47% hidden camera videos, and we have the kinds of videos that activists have made around the country, some really terrific, especially on women's issues. Give it a visit and play the videos and vote them up or down if you like them, and share them through Facebook and Twitter. There's really some great user content out there this cycle. It's an explosion like we've never seen before. So
what's the URL again?
It's supervoters.org.
Supervoters.org. Great. Okay, I'm going to check that out right after the show. How about you, Jonathan? One minute, anything that you want to say?
First, let me say that is a great website. I'm looking at it right now. I'm having trouble getting back to the conversation here. But I'll do a quick plug here for myself, too. Voter, if you are in the state of Florida, you can vote by mail. And you can sign up in 60 seconds or less by going to votingathome.com, votingathome.com. If you want to know more about me, you can visit my website, snowforcongress.com. I try to make myself available as often as possible. This is the most important election of our lifetime. And we are going to see historic turnout because these are historic times. And I want everyone to have their voice heard, and I want everyone to be part of this, because this is something that your children, grandchildren will ask about, where you were, where you stood in the 2012 election.
All right. Well, listen, it has been my distinct privilege to have the two of you on my very first ever show. I had a great time. I hope you guys also had a great time, and I hope the listeners enjoyed what you got to hear. And come back, join me this Thursday at 8 o'clock, and then after that, join me on Sunday at noon, and dial in, come talk to us. And again, Bob and Jonathan, anytime you guys want to come back on the show, I'd love to have you back. And thanks again.
Thank you for having me.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.